Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind, body medicine, and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hello. I was waiting for somebody to welcome me. But it's a good, confusing situation because what I want to talk about today was introducing myself and who I am. And a big part of it is that in a couple of weeks I'll be a 92-year-old man. And it's something I don't think most people are prepared for, the stages and changes that you have to go through, because you are getting older and you have to face limitations and ultimately even death, which I'd say for some elder people is a welcome situation, because it's more like getting well and leaving their bodies. But and as a doctor, you know, dealing with lots of people confronting these things. And the thing that got me into trouble and started writing books and being on programs and speaking was that when I saw people improving their lives since they were getting close to death and just wanted to enjoy the time left, they didn't die when they were supposed to. One story, I don't know if that, you know, I keep telling them over and over, and I've got a few, including a poem today for you, but it was a gentleman who introduced me at a very spiritual conference where I was one of the speakers. And he got up, and, I mean, he was just dressed in such a, you know, not nice outfit, looked like he was a bum on the street. I went over to him. I said, how could you come here dressed like that? There's a spiritual meeting. The people are really sincere and caring, and, you know, they're not bums. They mean it when they come and what they're trying to do with their lives. And he said, yeah, but I learned something. He said, I was a very wealthy fellow. I had a dress code at work. So I came in a certain suit I had. I told all my employees, you want a job, you have to come, you know, in a certain outfit, looking like a classy person. And then he learns he's likely to die in not too long a time. They said, I went to work, and I said to everybody, I don't care what you wear to work. I'm canceling the dress code. Just come in, dress the way you feel like it. And he dressed in, you know, a pretty crazy outfit. And he said, I noticed something. I didn't die. So I just, you know, canceled the dress code for the rest of my life. For myself and my employees, and here I am years later, I'm still around. And as I say, at 92, I've learned that too. This is the tough part I found, that when you had free time, what do you do with it? You don't know how long you're going to live. As I've said on this show, I'm sure many times, that when I went to wake my wife up one morning, I found her dead. She died in her sleep a few years ago. And it was a wallop for me. I had a pain in my heart. Could have killed me. So I do. I have a regular heart rate now, and I'm taking medications to keep my heart rhythm in a better, you know, pattern and rate and so forth. So, yeah, I could die. I could die during this program. And maybe some of you would wish I would, and you could stop listening. But it's been teaching me, and it's taken me a few years to learn what I think I needed to learn, which is really to live your life. What do you want to do? Because the things that bothered me, I was a very active guy. Number one, I've talked about, I was an artist. I painted portraits of our family. I love painting. And because I love painting, I was always trying to make the world look nicer, too. So I would do landscaping on our property, you know, trimming bushes, doing not just by hand clipping, but really doing nice work and with the right tools and keeping the place looking beautiful. And then suddenly, I can't do it anymore. I mean, I still have the eyes of an artist. So I look out the window and I think, oh, that doesn't look right. I got to fix that. But then I say, I don't have the energy to go fix that. Or the bird feeder. I love the birds. Because I ride an indoor bike in the morning. And I like to look out the window and see all the birds. And it's empty. And I'm not feeling like going and filling up a container and walking around the house, which isn't easy because I'm using a walker now. And so I leave it, or I get somebody who's helping me out to go out and do it. But it just changes everything, the rhythm of your life. Because before, if I saw something, I fixed it. And I felt good. I made the world prettier and funnier. I mean, I always had signs up. Yeah, we hired groundskeepers, you know, landscapers and everything. And this new group that one of our sons hired for me, they threw rocks from their power machine and put chips in the, you know, chipped off pieces of paint from the house. And from the fence, little pieces of metal capping fell off, because I'm sure they banged into that. And signs I had out around the house that were knocked over or broken. It really upset me. When I say signs, yeah, I have a sense of humor. People drove up to the house. I had all kinds of signs from the hospital that I posted on trees and other things. But at one hospital near us in New Haven called St. Raphael's, Hospital St. Raphael's, run by nuns, Catholic Church, I loved going there because the nuns were so sweet. Didn't feel like a hospital when they met you at the elevator and respected and honored you. And I used to tell them that they didn't have to do it. I just felt so good being with them. And the hospital is more part of Yale now. Nothing wrong with their all joining, but it used to be more of an independent hospital. And there was one sign in the parking lot that said, you know, that it was for the, where the nuns live, for the convent only, reserved for convent. So I took it home. The nuns knew me and forgave me for everything. I took it home, put it right in front of our house, so if people drive up to our house where the parking area is, it's like a big circle in front of the house and the entrance. I put the sign, convent only. And, you know, I just love it there, and I get such a kick out of it. And also one for lawyers, you know, with an arrow pointing off to the side. And I have ones from Cape Cod that relate to the water and all sorts of things, because we used to have a house on the Cape and loved going up there with the kids and just relaxing. And to me, it just makes me feel good to see those things, but I don't have all the energy and, you know, the, I don't know what to call it, in me, that when I see the sign tilting or falling, oh yeah, they broke one of them that said parking for residents only, and the landscapers rode over that and broke it with wood. And so I'm not, you know, redoing it or nailing it up again or anything else. I just, I'm learning to accept. And, but it's hard. So what's going to happen when you get older? And that's the part I meant to get to. You know, during the day, you may be eating a meal, going to the bathroom, seeing a friend, going to the doctor, or shopping, whatever. But there are times where you don't have something to do. And how do you decide what to do? Now, most of the time, I go to the bedroom, I lie down, I take a nap. Or I go outside and stretch out on a nice, comfortable chair. You know, I don't go in the sun anymore because I have a shaved head that I decided to shave. It didn't fall out because of any treatment for anything. But I got spots on my head from exposing it to the sun for years and years because I had shaved it in 1960. And I learned that you need to protect the skin on your head. When it's getting a full day of sunlight, things happen to it. One little skin cancer was taken off. The rest are benign, and they just form from reaction to the sun's energy. So now I keep my head covered. But I'm still a different guy with a shaved head. Because I just felt I needed to uncover things. That I learned through personal therapy, that why did I shave my head in 1960? To uncover the spiritual sides of myself and let them out and be expressed. And I was so happy when I read about it, and learned that that was the interpretation from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and others about why monks shaved their head. And I found it fascinating, too, that I had named the painting The High Priest, and I'm sure some of you heard me talk about this, that I, you know, had painted the portrait, but it was of me all covered up. As a surgeon, cap, mask, gown. So if you visit our house, you don't know it's me. Whereas everybody else in the family is who they are in the painting. I've talked about this where my wife is with her old bike that she had from the time of a teenager, two-wheeler. And I had to paint her with that, not some evening gown. Because I felt dressing her up in jewelry and an evening gown, that's not my wife. But when she was on her bike, I knew that's my wife. And I painted her with no trouble. And she's just as beautiful straddling her bike. But anyway, a friend of mine called Ann Fasanella sent me a poem called Old Man Running. And it struck me because it answered for me all my troubles. What do I do when I don't have anything to do? Go take a nap. And then I just think of things that have happened to me as I've gotten older and what I'm not doing anymore. And I fall asleep, but I don't feel good just taking a nap. And I wrote this poem. I didn't write it. She wrote it and mailed it to me. And I thought it really was about answering all my troubles. It's called Old Man Running. And I want you to all think about it. You may say, I don't want to get old. Well, the option is dying young. And I don't think that's fun. Old Man Running. When the old man stops running and the dust finally clears, he looks back on the days that turned into years. The roads he chased, the dreams he sought, now feel like whispers of a life he forgot. He was too busy, too driven, too caught in the race to notice the tears of his loved one's face. The clock kept ticking, the sun kept rising, and he kept moving, never realizing the children who waited for him to come home, the wife who spent evenings alone by the phone, the friends who reached out only to find he was always too busy, lost in his grind. Now the old man stops running. His pace finally slows. He feels the weight of the moments he let go. The meetings, the deadlines, the endless quest for more than he needed, all life's great behest. But where are they now, those he once ignored? The laughter, the love, the bond they once stored. He's older now, wiser, with time in his hands. But the echoes of absence are like sinking sands. He wants to be present, to mend what was torn, but finds that the years have left him forlorn. The faces are distant. The voices are faint. The love that he longed for now tainted with restraint. Yet still he reaches his hands weathered by time, hoping to hear, to restore, to climb back to the hearts he left in the wake of a life too busy to give what it should take. When the old man stops running, he finally sees the value of moments, of time spent at ease. He learns to sit quietly, to listen, to be part of the life he once failed to see. But time is a river and knows only one way, and the bridges he burned may not lead to today. He's ready now, but the world has moved on. The face is familiar, yet somehow withdrawn. So he waits in the silence, hoping they'll come to share in the peace he's finally won. To sit by his side, to hold his hand tight, to forgive the past and bring back the light. When the old man stops running, he learns too late that love is the treasure we cannot recreate. For all the riches, the power, the fame are nothing compared to love's gentle flame. So he whispers a prayer, a wish from his heart, that those he neglected might still play a part in the days he has left. As he finally slows, when the old man stops running and reaps what he sows, and if they return with forgiveness in their eyes, he'll hold them close and never disguise the death of his love, the truth of his care, for now he knows what it means to be there. When the old man stops running, he finds his way back to the love he once kept at bay. And in that embrace, he feels life anew, a second chance to cherish, to hold, and to renew. And my friend who wrote this is Anne Fasanella. And in the past, I've always felt she had too much to say and too much to write about. But when this came, it really hit my heart, because it's me. Aging, not liking the limits that come with it, because I want to do things. And how do you learn to just be who you are? That sentence, what it means to be there. When the old man stops running, he finds his way back to the love he once kept at bay. And I was a runner too. At age 70, I ran a marathon, 26 miles, to celebrate my birthday. And it's interesting, since I'm going to mention all these things now, I have a shirt on, you know, like a t-shirt under my regular shirt. And I just pulled it out of my drawer. And what did it say? Training for New York Marathon. Wow. And it was 98 or something. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to speak to you. And I put that shirt on also, that there are no mistakes. So I'd say to all of you, decide what you want to do with your life and the time. and do it. Don't get into bed like me. Say, oh, I need to take a nap. I'm an old man. I need to rest. I need to this. I need to that. The reason I said those things was because I couldn't think of what to do. You know, I am physically not totally disabled. I mean, I can walk around and do things, but, you know, I'm not allowed to drive a car. I'm not allowed to go out and trim trees anymore and do all kinds of things. So it's not the me I knew. It's a new old me, or I should say older. I don't know what old is. We can each define it for ourselves. But I think what frustrates me most, because I'm a doctor's personality, that if I can't do everything, help everybody, yeah, it bothers me. I want to make the world nicer. And I noticed that and made it clear to the lady who's in my house helping me with things. Because she wondered why I go out in the front yard to sit outside and I'm moving chairs. And I finally said to her, it's because that's the artist in me. I know where these chairs used to be, so I'm putting them back where they were, you know, for years. So when I sit in the front yard, I can say, oh, it looks the way I wanted it to look. And I don't have to think, you know, sit out here not liking how it looks and wanting to move everything. That's my personality, you know, the surgeon. I got to fix it. So you pick up a chair and you move it 10 feet. And then, that looks good. It's in the right place now. And I say that to all of you. Quiet your mind by putting things in the right place. And the right place doesn't have to be a physical entity. I'd say it's a place in your mind where your mind becomes calm and you look at the world and you love it. All the colors. Yeah, I mean this literally. When I come out of the bedroom heading for the kitchen, with a walker. That's where my aide who hears me clinking along with a walker. She gets up and meets me to take care of me because she's my alarm clock who gets me up in the morning. And then I get dressed and head on to the kitchen. And it's looking out the window when I see the green, the colors, the blue sky. And that's something I've always thought and questioned. How did God decide to make a blue sky, green leaves, you know, brown earth? Think about that. Why is a heart red? We have all these other beautiful colors. Why make it red? And why is purple a combination of that emotional color and the blue sky and becomes a spiritual color? So you begin to see there's meaning in everything. Yeah, that's what life is about. It's really, I mean, think of yourself as God. How do you decide what to do? How do you decide what color things should be? What should I let people do? Should we have wheels to roll along on? Why do animals have to have four legs? I mean, I know creation is amazing. So, be creating.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning, fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love Magic and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of five children, and grandparent of eight, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love Magic and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love Magic and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello, everybody. Something just interesting popped into my head, because when we take a break, we're off the air talking to some of the people in the studio. And, you know, it's the getting back, time to get back. And I say to all of you, stay in the program. You know, don't turn your life program off. And I don't mean that has to be dying. I mean, you can stop learning, stop living, just existing. And that's part of what got me here talking to you, that I don't want to just exist. I want meaning. I want meaning. And it's, oops, almost dropped the phone. And it's harder when you get to be 91, because you can't do all the things you want to do. You have to ask people for help, and they don't all think you're sane. Our children have, I think, pretty well learned about their father, so they're usually okay when I need help, and I can learn from them, too. The things that they do, how interesting it gets to me to watch them evolve. And that can include if one of your kids says, I don't know what to do when I grow up, say, well, what are you thinking about? And if they give you two or three professions, say, draw yourself doing each one. And give them a full box of crayons. Then the day after they finish, sit down with them and look at them. And just tell them what you're seeing, you know, which looks comfortable, which looks good, which would you prefer if you were them, based on the drawing. And one of our kids has some cancer now. And I said to him, draw a picture of yourself and your treatments. Use all the colors of the, you know, of a rainbow available. You don't have to use every one. But, you know, if somebody just picks up a black crayon, we got a problem. But let's see what life is in the picture. And I don't tell them what I'm going to do, but make sure you have a black, white, and the rainbow. You know, black, white, brown, and the rainbow. And then when you're done, bring it to me. And then we can sit and talk. And everybody who does it is impressed. And it isn't me that's wonderful. It's what's coming out of them. This hidden wisdom. As I've said on the show before, when you say to doctors, draw yourself working as a doctor, guess who's left out of the picture? You, the patient. It's incredible. Over 90% of the time, draw yourself working as a doctor doesn't have a patient in it. And if you're having trouble with a doctor, say, would you please draw a picture of yourself working as a doctor? And then you'll see what happens. Don't say, draw your picture examining me. Draw a picture of yourself working as a doctor. You'll see a diploma, you'll see instruments, you'll see a desk, and your doctor, but you won't be there. And the other way around, see, when I, as a doctor, cared about the patients and how they were going to do, I'd say, draw yourself receiving your treatment. Draw yourself in the office, you know, and I can see how they feel about doctor, treatment, family. You know, you can get all those things included. Draw your home and family. Draw yourself at work. I can't believe I haven't told you about the child named Amy who drew a purple sort of cloud over her bed in the hospital. And I told her mother, stop running around the world trying to cure her. I mean, yes, I know you want to cure her, but you're dragging her, wearing yourself out. Your life isn't a life anymore. Take her home and love her. And I said, because I see from her picture, she's ready to go. And the mother brought me a picture. And it showed a scene of a house, like a room in the house. But on the table in the middle of the room were 8 stick-like things, like candles, standing across the table. Not lit, just standing there. I said, I can't tell you what it means. I said this to her mother, but the 8 is important. She's telling you something. I mean, the number 8 alone means a new beginning. I hadn't thought about that before. Because every religion has 7 days in the week. 8 as a symbol of a new beginning, as a number. Things are changing is the new beginning. You know, it doesn't mean it's a new year. It means a change. And 8 days later, mother came in to my house with the drawing. She said, Bernie, today is Amber's birthday. When I went in to see her, she said, Mom, excuse me, it was the mother's birthday. The mother came and said, Bernie, today is my birthday. When I went into Amber's bedroom, she said, Mom, today's your birthday. I drew a picture for you. And it was 8 days from the day we had talked about, you know, what the drawings mean and what's happening. And she had drawn it 8 days before. She said, I drew this picture for you for your birthday. And there were those 8 candle-like structures. And Amber said, Mom, this is my gift to you for your birthday. I'm dying today to free you from all the trouble. And what a difference that made to a mother who had been tearing herself apart trying to cure a disease that nobody was able to help her with. And Amber is the one who freed the mother and gave her life again, gave her her gift. I'm dying today to free you from all the trouble. And think of it with seniors, too. You know, if, like I'm feeling, what do I do today? I have nothing on schedule, and I don't have the strength and the energy to go out and, you know, do physical work, yard work. I can't run another marathon and train for that. What am I going to do? Well, I could go home and be depressed and just sit and stare into space. Or I can find some little thing to do. You know? Yeah, you could sketch a little picture. You could do a little something in the front yard if you wanted to. Or just sit with your pets. You know, I think most of you know or heard me talk. I have two cats still here. Hope and Princess. And boy, are they good to me. It is so obvious. When I go to bed, they go to bed. And they cuddle with me and love me, and I pet them. And it just feels so good to have them there saying we love you. And I know they would like me to feel better the way they cuddle around me. And yes, and when they want something, they let me know too. But 'cause the front yard is, as I said, fenced in. So the house and the fence contain them, but they're free to be outdoors in that area. Because we live, as I said, in the woods, and I don't want some other animal coming and killing them. We've had a lot of things happen over the years with all the creatures we had. And all the creatures we adopted, because these wild animals became friends with our animals. And as I've said, that's from skunks to raccoons to snakes to you name it. And I've told the story how all the chickens became our children because the eggs were hatched in the house in the kids' bedrooms in glass tanks. And so all the creatures thought our kids were their parents because who did they see when they popped out of an egg? And everybody used to try to go to school with our kids. And see, that's the part that makes my life interesting, that I can laugh at. You know, watching chickens and ducks and geese get on a school bus. And the bus driver gave up. I mean, he knew he couldn't control them and keep them off. So he would take them to school, let them all jump out. Then they weren't allowed in the school, so they came walking home. It was just about a mile away from the entrance to the high school where our kids got dropped off when they were older. But it's just amazing. So remember that. Get pets. They keep you alive. When you pet a furry creature, your internal hormones are changed. And your body calms down, feels better. That's why I keep getting back to, and the shock I got was how quickly my heart was broken after I found my wife. I mean, I literally just touched her cold hand and wrist. And within, let's say, 10 seconds, I was in intense pain. Right through into my chest, like somebody had put a knife in, and you felt how deep it went. You know, and then the changes in my heart rhythm and other things started happening. And, you know, I've mentioned the craziness of numbers and how when I, because my wife was born on 9/9, and September 9th, as a matter of fact, wow, that's going to be a few days from now. That was her birthday. And I heard somewhere that more people are born on September 9th and any other day of the year. Now, I don't know if what I heard was crazy, but I heard it on some program. Somebody must have looked it up. And 9, you know, 9 months and everything else, I'm sure it has an effect on people to give birth to themselves on that day, on the women. But it was powerful. And that number has stayed with me, and I see it everywhere, whether it's on a clock telling me it's time to get up or what day it is. Or, you know, it's like the day I look at the clock in the moment looking for some answer to a question, and a certain number will pop up, and I go, oh, okay, I know what to do now. So keep up the good work. And most of all, this is the part that I'm sharing with you and why I read that poem. You may not want to hear all these traumatic stories and events, but it's to know you make it traumatic. Because, yes, I've had a hard time dealing with getting old. Call it aging, whatever you want. You know, that, as I say, I'd look out the window and realize you can't go out there and fix that. And the people, from my wife to the lady who is my angel or aide or whatever you want to call it, she'll tell me your attitude. You know, you may not be able to do something, but what can you do? You could be happy to take a nap, too. Instead of fixing, you know, your car or the house or the yard, all these things. It's crazy. Little things do make me feel better. A little cap came off one of the posts on the fence in our front yard when the guys are working on it, landscaping, and I haven't found it, but when I can find it or go buy one and pop it back on the post so the fence looks perfect again, yeah, that'll make me feel very good. So that's a project I have now. Got to get a little piece for the fence and put it back in. Does it make a big difference in the world or life? It's just that we all need to be artists to make a better picture. And I mean it. It can just be small things that you do that help somebody out, make it a little better. That's why when I think of the chip of paint that popped off the house, I want to paint that little spot and make it the color of the house again instead of white. And then I'll sleep better and I'll feel better when I walk past the front yard and I see it looking better.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love, Magic, and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, M.D. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love, Magic, and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, M.D. is available on Amazon.com and find bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
Smudge Bunny, a book for children by Dr. Bernie Siegel, is based upon a true story of a bunny named Smudge, whom the Siegels really rescued. This charming tale about Smudge Bunny and her mother can help teach a child how to survive difficulties and turn them into blessings, as well as getting greater self-esteem. Smudge Bunny by Dr. Bernie Siegel, a charming tale, a bunny's tale, just for your child. Get it today at Amazon.com, bookstores, or Bernie's website at ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back. I forgot who used to have that accent, but it was always sounds like he was talking about the, the musician Bach, composer. Welcome Bach. Anyway, with numbers, I just think Elizabeth Hoover Ross and her accent, too. But, because when I drew a picture for her, that's what got me started. How much she knew about my life from an outdoor scene I drew. It was just unbelievable. But I believed it. And that's what changed me. You know, people say, oh, how can you do that? How can you do that? That's not nice. That doesn't make sense. But it sure made sense to me. And one thing she just said was, Bernie, why is 7 important? I said, what are you asking me that for? It was an outdoor scene. You drew 7 trees. And then we got started with her asking me questions, and I realized this totally, you know, abstract painting that I did at a workshop had no meaning or sense to me. I just drew an outdoor scene from my imagination. And boy, did she have the right questions to ask me. And that's where I first met my inner guide, who turned out to be my angel, George, and a rabbi, and who Elizabeth also saw later when I spoke at a funeral. Standing next to me, she said. That's why she asked me if I was Jewish at a Christian funeral. And I've mentioned this before, I'm sure. But you see, what changed me were my experiences. I didn't say, oh, that's crazy. That's just coincidental that you felt that, asked that, said that. But it ain't. So, whenever you see things or notice things, always define them. And listen to the words you pick to define them. Because they may have a meaning to you. And then suddenly, what you did really means something to you. You know, that's why as an artist painting portraits, I was just so amazed when years later I looked at portraits, and it was about our children as adults, if you know what I mean. I mean, what they were doing in the portrait of them as a child, where they were playing, who was in the painting, it was, wow, that's a part of your life now. And they accepted it. You know, if they didn't like what I saw, they might argue with me that wasn't them, that was, But I know they all accepted that these were impressions that I was getting from their personalities, and that's why they became part of the painting. You know, that could be people, animals, where the painting was, emotional look on the faces in the paintings, all those things. But I knew it was telling me what they were going to be like when they grew up. So don't be afraid to do it for yourself, too. That would be a good thing to do. Get a box of crayons, because that could help you, or even with a pencil or pen. Draw a picture of yourself. Get a piece of paper, like a piece of typing paper, you know, full-size page, and draw a picture of yourself. When you're done, put it away for a day or two. Then bring it out and ask yourself, why did I do this? Why did I do that? Oh, I left my ears off. You know, I'm not listening to everybody. Or I'm deaf. I mean, it can be either thing. But draw it and put it aside and then come back. And why you might have drawn different members of the family in different colors and so forth. Even if you don't use colors, you'll learn something. But it helps a lot to see the color. Red is the color of emotion. You know, that could be obviously love or anger. But when you pick out somebody at work or in your family or wherever, why them? And it can help you when you go in to be with them again and heal that. You know, it would be interesting if businessmen did that with all their employees. Everybody draw yourself at work and draw your home and family. And then you could sit in groups and go over them and why you feel that way about your family and how that affects yourself at work and your home, up and back, how it radiates. And teachers ought to do that. Draw your home and family. Then they know why the kids in their class are having trouble. And why other kids are perfectly comfortable with everybody, because they're loved at home. So, you know, I'm always bringing up Donald Trump as an example of all these things I'm talking about. It's him and how his parents treated him. And it shows so obviously with all his decisions and what he does. He's doing it for the wrong reasons. And I mean that in the sense of personal. When he gets to be a president, yeah, he may want to help people. But it's still how he does it. And how it'll make the people feel about him if he does it. And proving he's right. And the other people are wrong with what they wanted to do. And it just goes on and on. So, everybody, yes, do what makes you happy. And really think about what that means to you. What makes you happy? And the majority of people who win the lottery have said, it's one of the worst things that ever happened to me. Because of what it did to their family and what people wanted from them and a whole host of things. So if you win the lottery, put it into a special fund and then form a committee that decides what to do with it and who to help and how to help and everybody else. That makes a big difference. And they don't have to get mad at you. And our kids used to have a hard time with me, you know, with trying to live the sermon, like that poem I read to you. But now I hear fewer complaints, and they've learned that I may not be the best, let's say, father in the world or always do the right thing, but that I'm trying and I can be forgiven. And that doesn't mean some of them don't get mad at me and yell at me. I mean, a lot of this can be mechanical, too. My computer went through a timer and keep breaking down. And I don't know how to fix a computer, but one of our kids does. But he'd get mad at me because I'm driving him nuts to get him to fix my computer because he did it better than the guy who earns a living repairing computers in order to get him to come to the house and to do it right. So all of those things. And you know, another thought pops into my head. All these people who keep calling me on the phone in order to sell me something or get me to take some insurance or health care plan or something. Oh, my God. The phone rings all day and into the night. I mean, not at 1 a.m., but, you know, till dinner time. And it's, they ask you, you know, is it your name? Yes. And then, are you interested in blah, blah, blah? Do you have any illnesses, insurance, this, that, that? Yeah, I've learned to have a quick answer and hang up. Something, you know, a little crazy, so they know to not call back because it's not going to work. And especially when they, I say, how are you? I say, I'm 92. You know, and then it's like, oh, there's no point talking to him about selling him something. So think about all those things. And also tell everybody I love you. That confuses them completely. I love you. I've shut people up more times when they've come up to me with some big thing and they say something, you know, what they want me to do for them. And I'll just say, I love you. And they know that's my way of saying, I can't do all that, no. I've gotten past that stage in my life. But I'm still struggling with it. What do you want to do when you have free time? Spend some time thinking about that. What do I want to do with my free time? And if it's planting vegetables, go ahead and do it. If it's taking a walk, jogging, painting a picture, doing something for somebody else, go ahead and do it. Because I always remember my parents' third message. What should I be when I grow up? What should I do? Look at all the people and what they need, and then decide which of their needs are you going to help them with, and go be that. And I always felt my parents were not helpful. I wanted an answer, you know. Be an engineer, be a plumber, be a doctor, be a dentist. Be anything. They never gave me an answer, but they taught me, do what makes you happy. Folks, figure out what makes you happy and go and do it. And that doesn't mean be selfish. But do what makes you happy. Love you all, and I mean that. I may not like what you're doing, but I love you.